Hi, and welcome to Housewives of True Crime.
Welcome.
Welcome. I am Tabitha. Give me Dateline, white wine, and I'll pick up your kids in the carpool line.
The next day, right?
Yeah, the next day.
Okay. And I am Gretchen. I like white wine, true crime, and in bed by 9 because I have a lot of stuff to do in the morning.
We are Housewives of True Crime.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Welcome,
Housewives of True Crime.
Hi,
Monday.
I should say, boo.
I think this is the week that everybody has the parties, right?
Yeah.
So, you guys, Gretchen and I are dressing up next week.
Yeah, we're really excited. It's a really good one.
It's a good one. So if you do not watch on YouTube, I suggest you go to YouTube right now and go to Housewives of True Crime and subscribe to our channel so that as soon as next Monday's episode comes out, you can see who we are becoming. Every Halloween, we decorate ourselves into something else. And this year,
we've had some wins.
Fun.
We've had some fails.
I don't think we've had fails.
Oh, no. I think when we did, I did the year, remember, Teresa Giudice got married, yeah. And I did the big thing on
the
my
wedding.
Head.
Yeah.
It kept falling off.
Oh, well.
Because I mimicked her ginormous good. Hair cut yeah. that year.
And I was Lisa Rinna that year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think we've done pretty good.
Okay.
Over the years. So this one might
I think it's
going to
be our
all,
best
though.
Yet.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Okay, so I didn't tell y'all that I went to Disney because I didn't think I was actually going to go.
Because it's in Florida.
It was
and
in Florida.
There was a situation there recently.
Yes, and so it was very, very, we had planned it for a whole year because this is my mother-in-law. What she said is the last thing on her bucket list, okay? She's turning 80 next year, and so she wanted to go to Disney World. She's never been. So we had booked it with my sister-in-law, and so the whole family.
Yeah. God bless you. Go in with the in-laws. I don't care how much you love them. It's a lot. There's a lot of factors at amusement parks. Everybody wants, it's a lot.
Yes. It actually turned out so amazing. I mean, everything was, we landed in Orlando on Friday and it looked just beautiful and everything was great. However, so my mother-in-law doesn't walk very well. So we got one of those scooter things for her to drive around the park. And before we even get on the first ride, she is loving the scooter. My kids are loving the scooter because they can ride on the back, they can hop on. And she's like a woman on a mission. If you know her, that's just her life. And so she decides to go first in the line. And at Disney World and all the parks, it's handicap accessible. So you can take that scooter through the whole entire line.
No way, really?
Yes.
It's not like a stroller situation where you have to just...
You have to just leave it no, it's not. You could take, the strollers you park and then whatever. You can take this all the way up and then you leave it right when you get to the ride and then they take it for you.
Okay.
So she's going down and my son, Caden, is like, Grandma, wrong way. She's not listening to him at all. She runs right into a rope, literally into a rope, and it looks like it's going to decapitate her.
Oh God.
And she doesn't take her hand off the gas.
Oh God.
She just keeps going. She gets flung off of the scooter. Oh. I mean, it was a situation. Oh my God. It was so scary. It was probably scarier than any ride that you could ever be on. Right. Because I mean, she really, thank God it ran into a pole. It was fine. It was fine.
Did you bruise the poor old lady up?
Oh, it looked like she got strangled.
When you're old,
and
you get the bruises, immediately, oh, man,
you immediately look really bad. I mean, her whole entire neck was just. But then after that, she decided to just go balls to the wall, and she went on every single ride, even the upside down, rock and roller coaster.
Well, 'tis the season. All those bruises, she can fashion that into some kind of costume.
True,
look.
But I would have been I would like those bruises for a facelift. Yeah. You know, you're going to get bruises all over your neck and face. Another thing I wanted to tell you, and just real quick, and ask you, at Universal, it was interesting. I was sitting there waiting for my kids to go on one of those scary rides, and there was a woman and her mother with two smaller kids, kids that could go to the bathroom on their own. They don't have diapers. Okay.
Okay.
And just in the middle of everything, they've got one of those pee cups, like that you have in your car for like extra, you know, security.
Pee in a cup all the time. Yeah.
And they just like pull their kids' pants down right in the middle of everybody and just.
Yeah. That takes some balls. Are you asking me my opinion? Yeah. No, I would not. Nope. Wouldn't do that.
I was like, I mean, there's a bathroom right there.
Have somebody save your place. Yeah. Save some.
No, they were not. No. They were waiting for their husband. I already saw it. The husband and the grandpa came. They went to the big roller coaster. These kids were not going on the big roller coaster. So they just didn't want to go to the bathroom. And I was like, I don't know. I'm not with it.
I'm not with it.
And then my niece is with me and she's looking at the situation and going like, what is going on?
Is that an
here?
Option? No, it's not an option.
No, it's not an option.
Girl, it's not really an option. Weird. It's not an option until unless you're at, like, say, option. The baseball field and there's no bathroom.
Right.
And you're in the privacy of your own vehicle because you're going to pee your pants, but your kid is still playing. Okay.
Yeah, that is when I think you have those. Not in the middle of the amusement park when everybody's watching you.
No, that's not working for me.
Me neither. Okay. Mm-mm. We're on the same page. I'm glad because I know we have pee issues here.
Yeah. I mean, we're really free about peeing.
It's a problem.
So if we have a problem with it, it's a problem.
It's a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do we have a problem on our hands today?
Let's get to
it. Talk about.
Yeah. Okay. Today's case is a listener suggestion from Ashley Gibson. This case comes right out of my hood. Like, I didn't have to go out of my way to do a drive-by.
Stop. Like next door to you?
Not next door, but I drive by this particular part of it on a regular basis. That is something I was so curious about. I was curious if listener Ashley is from my hood too. Mm-hmm. You know?
Did you ask her?
No, I don't converse. I just, you know, like web sleuth people stalk their Facebook profile. Okay. And Ashley lives in Texas.
What?
No yeah. Way. So that is just like coincidentally spooky to me. Very appropriate for October.
Totally.
Don't you think? So thank you for that. Let me tell you about Ed Shin. He is your typical fraudgy fucker. Good looking, charming, smart. Ed grew up in Orange County, California, and his parents lived in a really desirable neighborhood in San Clemente in a very nice home on the hill. Out of high school, Ed went to the prestigious UCSD, it's University of California in San Diego, and right after, he got a job at Merrill Lynch working for a broker.
Successful guy.
Yeah. Ed had a taste for all things flashy. So he got himself a souped-up Mercedes that he probably couldn't really afford. I mean, even working for Merrill Lynch right out of college, I don't think they pay you that much money off the bat. But regardless, Ed was living it up, rolling in a Mercedes in Irvine, California, where he was living with a roommate at the time when Ed's father received an email that said Ed had been taken, and if he didn't drop off $1 million in a black bag at the first trash can at the San Clemente Pier, his son would be killed. Side note, I am real familiar with that pier and those trash cans too. And they'd be getting emptied all the time. That would be like a real dumb spot to leave money and expect to be able to get it without anyone noticing that you're going through the trash. Also, there is a huge lifeguard tower on that pier. So they could be easily watching you without you knowing they were watching. That is just the dumbest place for a ransom money drop I've ever heard of, but I digress. Okay. Turns out Ed's daddy wasn't feeling like dropping the money at the San Clemente Pier or anywhere anyways, because he responded to the email by calling police. By the way, I don't think Daddy had a choice because I don't believe he had access to $1 million.
Who has access to just $1 million sitting around in
their bank account? I don't know, but I did look into him and it appears his home was foreclosed on not too long after this. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what the situation was there, whether it was some unfortunate business venture, maybe his family was unaware, the lifestyle he had been providing them was beyond their means. He hadn't disclosed he wasn't making the money he used to, you know, that's okay. Like what I would speculate, but I purely speculate. Okay. Well, the police didn't speculate. They took the situation very seriously, and they used their fancy police technology to determine that the email was sent from inside the Shin house, the big one on the hill. So you get where I'm going with this. Ed tried to extort his own parents.
Not knowing that they don't actually have the money.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Ed, come on.
Yeah. Okay, so after his roommate learned the truth about Ed's missingness, he bounced. And I get it. You know, lying roommates are a bad scene. Get out while you can. Mm-hmm. I think that Ed having to find a new roomie was about the only repercussion he faced because charges were never filed against him. And maybe they should have been because, spoiler, Ed did not learn his lesson. You know, oh, what a tangled web we weave, right? Before Ed tangled another big web by practicing to deceive, a couple years went by after the whole fake ransom situation, and Ed's life appeared to be on the straight and narrow path. Ed got himself a wife and some children, and they became really involved in the megachurch scene at Saddleback, which is the megachurch of megachurches in the OC.
Gretchen, you've been there.
I have been there. Yeah, they do a real fun Christmas thing with lights.
Yeah, you've talked about it before.
Yeah, I recommend. I mean, it's such a mega church. I think they like have a Starbucks.
In this church?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
Yeah. Ed was a sports fanatic and jumped at the opportunity to live out his sporty fantasy and purchased a sports magazine called Legends when he was introduced to the owner who had just learned he was facing a terminal diagnosis.
Oh, that's sad.
Sad. They came to a $1 million deal to be paid in installments, and Ed took over the business of the magazine, but not the payments. He never made one. This is a problem. So the owner's wife was left with her terminally ill husband to deal with, and now she had to sue Ed to either get him to pay up, option one, or option two, give back control of the magazine. Well, Ed didn't like either of those options. So he hired a man to potentially off this woman, figuring that way he wouldn't have to choose either of the options he deemed undesirable if she was just like dead.
Gone.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, the person Ed hired went to this woman with Ed's plan. Charges were not filed against Ed, though, because there hadn't been an actual attempt on the woman's life. So the litigation nightmare for her just went on forever, and she still lived in fear. And I'm not sure if she ever recouped her money, but not a shocker, the magazine failed under Ed's directive. So all the while that Ed is driving the magazine into the ground and going back and forth with the woman that he has, you know, fraudulent her out of it, in 2008, he's going to a little Bible study group at Saddleback and lamenting how terrible the economy is and how rough the magazine business is, even if you fraudulent someone out of it.
What year is this again?
2008. Everybody was struggling, right?
Yeah.
And when he was lamenting, he left out the part to his Bible study friends that he was fraudulent this lady, right?
And that he wanted to offer.
Yeah.
Thou shalt not kill. I mean, that is...
Yeah, that doesn't go over well at Bible study, right?
No. Okay.
Well, a member of the group felt for Ed's struggling situation and decided to do his Christian service by first lending Ed money and then offering Ed a job at his lead generating company. Lead generating companies are still around and now they are highly regulated. Mm-hmm. But in 2008, people were making a killing in the business. Yeah. How it works is the companies make those commercials that say like, do you need debt consolidating? Did you suffer a workplace injury? Do you have mesothelioma? You know, whatever it could be. Okay. We can help. And then callers call an 800 number and the operators get the caller's info, and then they sell it to people that may or business that may or may not be able to help out the caller, mm-hmm. right? For whatever reason, they made some desperate call to a 1-800 number like at night. So it's not like my favorite business model. It seems like it like this could be unethical in some ways. But I will say that the man who offered a job to Ed at his lead generating company does seem totally legit and like a nice person.
I almost got a job at a lead generating company, one of my first after college. You know, it's one of those ones that like people, I think they have a big turnover, so they're always hiring.
Well, I think that there is probably some completely legit ways to do lead generating, but I think that commercials in the middle of the night or whatever, like that kind of stuff, just like preys on vulnerable people.
Like us.
Like me. Maybe that's why I'm so sensitive.
100%.
Although I think that is one rabbit hole I've never gone down. I've never like called to like, you know.
Buy HomeSense or whatever you bought?
Well, yeah, that is an ad for a product. But I've never called because I wanted to sue someone. I think that people that sue over dumb stuff are stupid.
Oh man. And it's like all too many times.
It's all too many times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that those 1-800 numbers don't really appeal to me, but anywho. Okay. Well, part of getting clients like businesses, you know, mm-hmm. to buy the calls or whatever for the company meant working the convention scene in Las Vegas. And Ed did not mind that at all. Remember, Ed was in touch with his flashy side.
And at that time, that's yeah. when I was going to a lot of those conventions.
Yeah.
They had those like convention girls.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's going to make an appearance.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
ESPN again, tab. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Okay. So Ed also had an affection for gambling and cheating on his wife, who was stuck at home raising his toddlers, taking him to like Sunday school at Saddleback while Ed's like raising the roof.
Also, thou shall not commit adultery.
Right. Ed. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
He's missing all the points of Bible study.
All of it. Yeah. So while Ed was working it in Vegas, he smooched potential clients in style. Like he would invite them to parties in the presidential suite at the Wynn. I mean, that's pretty
that's
good.
So pretty
Listen,
fancy.
A rack room at the Wynn is baller.
Uh-huh.
They're real nice.
Yeah, they're real yeah. nice.
Yeah.
Invite the presidential, me Ed, and I probably would have gone too.
Yeah, right? Well, it's two stories, this huge
amazing.
Presidential suite. Yeah,
yeah,
amazing. It was comped to him because he gambled so much there. They would also send their jet to go pick Ed up. So if you had met Ed back in the day, which you easily could have, you would assume that Ed is really killing it in the lead generation business because he clearly has a lot of dollars, right?
Yeah.
The truth is Ed was in possession of the dollars, but not all the money he was possessing was really
was his.
But I will circle back to that part because at this point, nobody knew that. So while Ed is appearing successful in the business, he meets a man named Chris Smith that was working for another tech company and they hit it off. So much so that Ed gets the owner of the lead generating company he works for to hire Chris, and the two worked so well together, they formed a new lead generating company together of their own. For Chris, this seemed like a great opportunity. He was a very ambitious guy, and he worked on the creative side of lead generating, making the infomercials and marketing. That was like his specialty. And Ed was the deal closer, the smoozer, the, you know, put it in motion side of the business. So Chris and Ed formed a partnership and had a 55-45 deal with respects to owning the company. And Ed handled all the financials. This new company they formed was called the 800 Exchange, and it was very successful, making $12 million the first year. Both men were reaping the benefits of the success. Ed's social media reflected his family, enjoying a lot of Disneyland trips, living his dream. Chris was an avid surfer, and he moved into a leased apartment in Laguna Beach, which is the dreamiest spot of in all of the OC, I think.
100%.
And now he could surf all the legendary spots out there all morning and come into the office in nearby San Juan Capistrano in the afternoon and, you know, bang out all the work that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. Chris liked to take off every year and go down to Indonesia to surf. And now he could really afford to take all the surf trips that he loved. Chris had a serious girlfriend, and he had confided in his family he was planning to propose to her. He was so excited about the direction the company was going that he had his brother Paul move down with his wife and kids to start working at the company with him. It was only about a week after Paul had made the move that Chris got the first big hint that Ed was not totally on the up and up. Okay, here's the part where I circle back to the money Ed was spending in Vegas. Well, remember that Bible study buddy who gave Ed his start in lead generating? Ed had been fraudulent-fucking him pretty much from the time he started working for him. Ed transposed the numbers from an account he was supposed to be using for customer payments to the numbers of his personal account. I mean, it's like so simple. And also, on top of that, he had opened his own lead generating company, like I just told you. Well, the man who he was working for did not know that. And so for a long time, Ed was taking prospective customers
to his own
over
company.
To his own company on this man's dime. Yeah. This man, Joseph Gray, figured all this out when he started hearing about how large Ed was living in Vegas. He knew his business was doing well, but not like private jet well.
Yeah, not that well.
Yeah. When he started looking into it, he uncovered that Ed had embezzled about $2.5 million. This was not just a blow to him financially. He thought of Ed as a close friend. This was personal.
And a part of his church, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Under the circumstances, he couldn't just let it go. And so he went to the authorities. Ed was arrested for fraud, and there were additional lawsuits filed, and Chris was dragged into them as a co-defendant because he's got this business with Ed, right? For the record, there is no evidence that Chris ever had any knowledge that Ed had been embezzling money before this happened. So now Chris is bummed. He has had his brother roped into the situation too now. He knows that him and Ed's company, 800 Exchange, is doing well, but he has put himself in a position because Ed handles all the books, which was fine when he trusted Ed. But now, you know, he's learned that Ed is not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. When you are in business together, I recommend full transparency, people. Okay. 100%. No matter how much you trust someone. Okay. Trust, but verify.
100%.
Chris now knows that he needs to protect himself, so he gets an attorney to protect his stake in the company. Meanwhile, Ed gets out of jail on bail and brushes the whole thing off like, this guy is just bitter that our lead generating company is so much more awesome than his.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I will take care of it, you know, no sweat, whatever.
And by the way, in California, there's no non-compete, right? So like, because people in Texas and places that have that are probably like, how could he do that? That's illegal, but it's not in California. Mm.
Well, Ed actually got real lucky. In November 2010, a judge ordered a settlement deal where if Ed could pay $700,000 in restitution by a deadline, he would not have to do any prison time. Otherwise, he was looking at 16 months. Well,
did he have the money?
Well, it seems like that should have been totally doable with how much money his new company was generating. But the problem was, Vegas. Ed had a gambling problem. And he had pissed away his money at the tables.
Yeah, I mean, private jets and big hotel rooms are big money. And I bet you there's only one of those presidential suites and they're not giving it to somebody that's not gambling. Even if you're paying
full price. Oh my gosh, get a load of this.
You know what I mean?
He tried to submit payment records to the court that were cashier's checks made out to the Wynn that he forged to make like they were restitution payments to Joseph Gray.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't work. But yeah. Also, when you're on a payment plan with the win, that's like a lot of, we're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah. He's taking big money out of there. He's probably fraudulent them also. It's like, yeah, I'll pay you.
Totally.
Back. Yeah.
Totally. The courts, they figured it out, right? Okay. So with the restitution deadline quickly approaching, his only way to make it was to take the money out of the 800 exchange company. And Chris is wise now. And now he needs Chris's signature to do that. Mm-hmm. It sounds like Chris wanted to sign a deal with Ed so he could move on with, you know, the new deal, get this guy off their back. You know, he just wanted access to all the business accounts and passwords going forward. He had been going back and forth with this, with his lawyer and Ed for months now. And then finally, one evening, Chris's lawyer received an email that said Ed had given him everything he wanted. They reached an agreement and Ed was going to now just buy him out and pay in installments. And he would send him the signed documentation soon. And he did. A couple of days later, Chris's girlfriend got a harsh email that it was over between them. Chris's parents and brother got an email that he had sold his share of the business to Ed and he was going to travel and he wouldn't be in touch. Chris's brother Paul was out of town at a wedding when all this went down, and Chris was supposed to pick his brother up from the airport. And when he never showed up, Paul learned that, oh, I guess Chris has already taken off for his travels. Mm-hmm. Getting stood up at the airport is awful, right?
Right.
So for Paul, this is kind of awkward, right? Because remember, he works at the 800 exchange still. And so now he's not sure what that means since his brother has bailed on the company. And because Chris was on like a sailing trip, he said, at this point, that meant no reception. So he can't even get in touch with his brother to get a feel of like, what is the state of the company, you know? Mm-hmm. But also, he's got a family. He doesn't have time to focus on that because he has to provide for his family. So while he's irritated with Chris for not giving him an explanation ahead of time, he also knew how stressful the relationship had been for his brother and Ed, you know, since the lawsuits came in. So he's happy for him, you know, go surf around the world and be free. You do you. When Paul did, you know, get back to Orange County and expect to go into the office for business as usual, Ed told him and everyone to take the week and work from home because he was having the office painted. Paul stopped by to get his computer and painting was happening, as well as a lot of deep cleaning. And Ed told him that was because his brother Chris had gotten really drunk at the office before he left and urinated and vomited all over.
Embrace new beginnings. What a better way to start off 2025 than to learn a new language. I got Rosetta Stone over a year ago and have really enjoyed learning a couple different languages. Y'all know that when I went to Japan, I was learning Japanese, and now that my daughter is taking French in school, I am learning French through Rosetta Stone. It's amazing. It's been around for 30 years, so it is really the most trusted online tool to learn a new language. They have 25 different languages to choose from: Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, Dutch. I mean, if you name it, they probably have it. I think that it's amazing, and you should think about doing this for your New Year's resolution too. It's convenient and flexible, and the value is unheard of. You get a lifetime membership for all 25 of those languages. Start your New Year's off with a resolution that you can reach. Today, Housewives of True Crime listeners are going to be able to take advantage of this New Year's special from Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your New Year's offer at rosettastone.com/today.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, and your retirement, even during the holidays. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you. And you don't need a ton of time. You can create your Acorns account and start automatically investing your money in just 5 minutes. Acorns helps you build your financial future in the background so you can focus on all your holiday shopping and parties. So genius. Another great thing about Acorns is you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now.
That could be $5 a day or even just your spare change. That's right. Acorns can round every purchase you make up to the dollar automatically and invest your spare change for you. So that coffee you grab on the way to the mall, that's investing. And you get bonus investments just for buying the stuff you need from the brands you love. With Acorns, every single gift you buy this year could put more money in your investment account. It's like cash back, but the bonus investments have a chance to grow. So head to acorns.com/clink or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid client testimonial. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns investing, involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/clink. Lady listeners, are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you are, you are most definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormonal disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. They are in our food, water, the air we breathe. They are all up in our business, messing with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier through these changes. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. I've been taking Hormone Harmony for months and will keep on keeping on because it just makes life easier. I feel less stress, less bloat. And just even, I feel more like myself. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CLINK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code CLINK for 15% off today.
Paul thought, that doesn't really sound like my brother. He's not a drinker at the office kind of guy. But then again, Chris didn't sound like Chris lately. All of a sudden, he's kind of, you know, just all about himself. So he just let it go, and a week later, got back to business at the 800 Exchange. As time went on, Chris touched base with his family, and his travels did sound amazing. He had a traveling companion named Tiffany Taylor, who was a former Playboy playmate, and so they were happy for him. After all, he was 32 years old, he'd made a killing in a short time, and Chris was the type of guy who said things like, someday I just want to make enough money to live off the grid, live the simple surf life, you know, get a little place in Costa Rica, bartend on the beach.
Yeah.
Too off the mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back at the office, there is a new employee. His name was Kenny Kraft, and Ed hired him to be his assistant of sorts. It was a pretty cush assistant job. He just like ran errands for Ed. One of the errands he ran was to drop off Chris's Range Rover at an LA parking lot. And then he got to move into the corporate, quote, apartment, also known as Chris's Ocean View Laguna Beach place.
Ed's assistant now gets to move into Chris's place.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. With all of Chris's stuff there.
No, Chris's stuff had been moved out.
Okay.
I would prompt myself to ask some questions, but Kenny is not that type of guy that asks a lot of questions. Or maybe he just didn't want to know the answers. He had to have been like early 20s.
Yeah. You're like, fuck yeah, dude. I'm going to like live it up in this Laguna Beach oceanfront. It's got to be like $20,000 a month a place.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean,
why ask questions?
He doesn't want answers, or he doesn't want to come off ungrateful or whatever. I mean, that would mean the end of the Ocean View and the cush job.
Yeah. No.
So the rest of the 800 Exchange employees did have questions, though, because all of a sudden they were getting calls from vendors that had not been getting paid, and it was very unsettling to them. Mm-hmm. After all, they had been making the sales. So like, where was the money going?
Right.
On a convention trip with Ed, Paul, Chris's brother, was more than unsettled about things. He was just confused. Ed would often hire atmosphere models to come to parties in his suite, like you were talking about, where these parties where he would, you know, like invite clients. On this particular night, one of the hired models was none other than Playboy playmate, Tiffany Taylor.
Oh,
Yeah.
Chris's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Paul immediately went up to her and said, you know, gosh, you know, nice to meet you. I'm Chris's brother. How was your trip to the Galapagos? Tiffany had no idea what he was talking about.
Oh my God.
Ed told Paul, oh, you're tripping, bud. Like, there's more than one Tiffany Taylor in Vegas. But in addition to everything else that seemed amiss.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Paul wanted out. He didn't know what was up, but he didn't want.
He didn't feel good anymore.
Deal with Ed anymore. Yeah. So he resigned from the 800 Exchange and moved his family out of the Orange County and onto a new job. This weird coincidence or whatever it was with Tiffany was not the first thing that seemed weird about Chris's trip. His sporadic emails had taken kind of a dark turn now. He talked about taking his own life. And he was traveling to places like India and Rwanda, which were not places he'd ever talked about going before.
Yeah, no,
he's a surfer. So yeah. Like Tahiti, Baja, those places make more sense.
Yeah.
Plus, he told his family he was done with the banks. So he was just using gold now. And so they're worried for his safety. Like, you're walking around all these places with,
with like
gold?
Bars of gold. So really happy too.
Yeah. So they're worried about his safety, his mental health. They're just really worried because they hadn't actually talked to him in months. Just emails, and they were beginning to suspect that it wasn't Chris writing them back. Chris's father wrote to him and asked, what was the lake you grew up on, and what was the name of our boat?
Oh.
Chris wrote back the name of the lake, but he didn't answer the name of the boat. Still, the response put Chris's parents at ease to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It would be unimaginable, you know, to come to the realization that someone had killed your child and been sick enough to impersonate them for months, right? You just wouldn't want to allow yourself to go there. You'd be like, no. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But what lake was it?
It was
it like Lake Havasu?
No, it was Lake, it starts with the Kelly Lake. It's in Northern California. Chris grew up like outside of Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Well, Chris's dad wrote an email to Chris along the lines, I guess maybe after he sat on it for a while, that just said, if you have hurt my son, I will be your worst nightmare, motherfucker. Because on some level, he kind of did know.
He knew.
Yeah. That just breaks my heart so much because I think he just couldn't bring it himself out loud. He's writing this email, but he's like comforting his wife and other son. Like, no, he's fine, but he knows.
Because you can't. Yeah. Wrapping your head around that is too painful. Yeah.
Too painful.
Right? And then you have to tell. Yeah.
So the response he got back to that email was, you know, stop tripping, dad. Which it's like these emails took on Chris's tone.
Yeah. Well, if you knew him,
because
you probably knew how
if you knew him, it would be easy to do. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it wasn't long before the awful truth was exposed. The awful truth was Ed had killed Chris at the office by bludgeoning or stabbing him to death. We might never know because Chris's body is still missing. How Ed's deviant plan to murder Chris and eventually make it look like he went missing in action, traveling through unsafe regions, unraveled was that Chris's parents got a call that Chris had defaulted on his lease. Being that Chris was a responsible guy, they couldn't believe he would have done that willingly. And so his father drove down from Oregon and filed a missing persons report for his son in Laguna Beach. When he explained the situation to detectives, they instructed him to reach out to the State Department so they could see the last place his passport was scanned. And when he did, the State Department informed him that Chris's passport had not been scanned. It didn't appear he'd have ever left the country. So a local missing person investigation for Chris proceeded. They brought in Ed for questioning, who told them that Chris had gone to Vegas at some point and gotten a fake passport. Ed talked a good game in his interview. He explained Chris was the type that wanted to travel for the rest of his life, and he had been paying him in installments, you know, to do so. He didn't make it sound like there was any bad blood between them. And the investigators pretty much bought what Ed was selling.
He's such a con man.
Yeah, he is. They didn't even follow through with Ed's story, like verifying, like, okay, well, let's see the wire transfers you're talking about.
Yeah.
None of it. Yeah. Thankfully, those guys that bought Ed's bullshit weren't the only ones investigating the case, though. That's because the 800 Exchange had up and left their San Juan Capistrano office without paying $40,000 in back rent that they owed to the landlord. Well, the landlord was interested in collecting what he was owed, and so he went to a private investigator. So the private investigator that was hired by the landlord was a man named Joe DeLu, and he was tasked with investigating the whereabouts of the 800 Exchange Company now and Ed Shin. He learned through his investigation that there was an ongoing missing persons investigation for the former business partner of Ed Shin, which was Chris. His spidey senses went up right away, and he called Chris's parents and asked them if it was okay if he looked into their son's case and he would not charge them anything to do it. He put in Chris's Range Rover into Carfax, and it came up right away for sale in the Bay Area. It had been repossessed. That's not a good sign.
No.
He asked the landlord if the 800 Exchange office was still vacant, and it was. And he also asked him if it was okay if he could take a look around. While he was there, everything looked as expected, but he spotted some blood in a door jamb that looked suspicious. So then he alerted the OC sheriffs, and they luminoled the office, and it lit up all over, even the ceiling. And when they pulled up the carpet, there was even more blood evidence. After they had Chris's parents submit their DNA, they were able to verify that all the blood at the office was from Chris Smith. And they determined that he had been a victim of homicide. So obviously Ed is their number one suspect. And so they are keeping tabs on him while they collected evidence. They flagged his passport, thankfully, because they were notified that Ed had boarded a plane at LAX to go to Canada. And they were able to get him off the plane just in time. They did it immediately on the grounds that it was a violation of his parole because he was still facing the whole embezzlement case, right?
Right.
And so that was the only reason why Ed thought he had been taken into custody. Well, when they told him about all of Chris's blood, he like shit himself. And okay.
Too bad Paul didn't come get his computer earlier.
Well, I mean, I've thought about that, but also it was already done, you know?
Yeah, I know, because that's when he said, I'm not gonna like, don't, right? He's like, don't come to the office because it's getting painted. I mean, it was already done at that point, but I'm just saying, I feel like maybe he could have at least saw something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They tell him they have blood evidence. Ed shits himself. He asks for an attorney. Interview over. But after about a half hour, Ed said he wanted to talk. And that's when he told what myself and eventually a jury of Ed's peers a tall tale about how he had killed Chris in self-defense. He said Chris rushed him and pushed him and, you know, like blah, blah, blah. He hit his head.
Right.
He said that then he panicked and called a fixer, a man named Johnny Vegas, who had him meet a Russian man on a street corner and pay him $10,000 or $15,000, he can't remember, to make Chris's body disappear. And this story doesn't add up for a variety of reasons. One, according to Ed's phone record, his phone pinged in a desolate desert area two nights in a row out by the Mexico border. Ed's explanation for this is that he was out there contemplating running away, but he couldn't, you know, he's such a nice guy. He couldn't abandon his family. Also, you can just drive. I mean, the best way to get across the border is just take the 5 all the way. You don't really have to detour like way into the desert, but you know, like whatever.
Right.
Okay. Another reason his fixer story doesn't jive is that they found Johnny Vegas. Johnny Vegas is like a legit concierge that Ed used to use on his Vegas trips. Like, he'll fix you up with a private dealer in your suite kind of fixer.
Right.
Not like bury a body kind of fixer.
Got it.
Yeah. Also, Ed confessed to being behind all the emails to Chris's family. And when you look at the contracts he had drawn up and submitted to the lawyer the night he killed Chris, he had to have put those together in advance. Like, he had it all planned out for sure. There was a search effort made with cadaver dogs in the areas where it was estimated that Ed had been, but sadly, the remains were never found.
It was too long.
Yeah. Ed's trial didn't take place until 2018, 8 years after the last time Chris was seen alive.
Wow.
Ed testified at the trial and told the same self-defense story and, you know, Johnny Vegas bullshit, and never gave up where the remains were. Mr. Kenny Craft was charged along with Ed, you know, because he had dropped off the Range Rover and moved into Chris's apartment.
Right.
So he was charged as an accomplice to Chris's murder, but with the family's consent, those charges were dropped before trial. So I guess they determined Kenny was just a pawn for Ed.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree. The prosecutor, Matt Murphy, also very cool disco ball that I would love to chat with if I ever got the chance, located Tiffany Taylor, the playmate. By the way, that's not her real name. Her real name is Summer.
Oh, I like the name Summer too. Why would she go with Tiffany Taylor?
I don't know. Well, she testified at the trial to corroborate that she never knew Chris, which just proved the whole scheming, conniving craziness of, you know, Ed's crime.
Right.
And speaking of craziness of Ed, it turns out 2 weeks after he committed the murder, he posted, okay, quote, "Though most of it was self-imposed through a series of bad decisions guided by bad judgment, I can safely say I'm happy to be here. God's salvation is the ultimate gift, because no matter what, no matter if you are a hardened killer hanging on the cross just a few hours away from your death, or born into a good Christian home whose family guides you to Jesus before you even commit serious sins, we are all people. People are worthy of being saved by a higher power who was our creator. So yes, I'm sorry. And yes, I will one day make good the best way I can on the things I've done. I can't say when, but hopefully sooner than later."
Like in the hot place, Ed?
I mean, so you think it's like that, Ed? Yeah. You think you are forgiven while you're still out there leading Chris's family to believe that he's alive?
Yeah, I don't think so, Ed.
And then he think about it. And then he had the nerve to have them thinking he was contemplating suicide. Because I'm pretty sure that the whole way the salvation thing is supposed to work is that you like truly repent for your sins. You got to be like real sorry.
Oh my gosh.
But that doesn't sound like you're sorry at all.
He's not sorry. He's a narcissist.
Totally. So Ed was sentenced to life. After the trial, the actual ultimate disco ball, beloved by all those who have an affection for true crime, Keith Morrison, visited Ed in prison.
Oh, tell me.
He tried, as other journalists, you know, that had also met with Ed had tried to do, which was, you know, he wanted him to tell him, just tell us where you put the body. Like, there's, everybody's done a show on this. Okay. There's a million of them. Okay. But Keith is the best, because he says, just tell me where you put the body.
Yeah, and just tell us.
Ed said he can't do it.
Why?
And Keith asks him, is it because you think someone would, you know, hurt your family if you did? And Ed says, no. And then the nerve of Ed, he told Keith that he wasn't going to give it up. And he said, sorry, I know it would be like a coup de grace for you. And Keith said, Ed, I don't give a flying fuck about that. I do care. And he says flying fuck on Dateline. I do care about the family and they would like to know. And, you know, I mean, Keith with his flying fucks, that's why we love him, right? You know?
Oh my gosh.
He's the best.
It's true.
It's true. So ultimately, Chris's family got some justice, but not his remains. It's so awful for them to look back now at how they were deceived. And oh my gosh, his poor girlfriend had to come to terms with the man that she loved, that she just had deemed like a psycho, who had dumped her and ran off with Tiffany Taylor, was, in fact, in love with her and did not want to hurt her. And now she had to like grieve all that. And my God, his poor brother, Paul, who has this recollection of going to the 800 exchange office and asking Ed, what is that foul smell? When he stopped by to get his computer, now knows what that smell really was.
I know. That's so sad.
And of course, his parents, the awful toll it has taken on them. I mean, that never ends. And the sentencing, Ed's mother actually spoke to the court. And in an attempt to ask for mercy for her son, she said that this was all her fault because Ed wanted to be a pastor out of college. And she told him that was not good enough. Listen, mama of Ed.
No.
I would bet that if Ed was a pastor, I would still be doing a crime about him because I think his diabolical shit runs deep. And a lot of pastors fraudgefuck and murder people. And
not lots, but there has been some.
There has been. Okay. Like it's possible.
Yeah.
Ed is currently at Sentinella State Prison. His wife divorced him and moved out of state. And so I don't know if he receives a whole lot of visits.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Rest in peace, Chris Smith.
Yeah, poor guy. I looked him up. Chris was very handsome.
He was very handsome. And I hate to admit it, but Ed's handsome too. You can see how he got away with being so charming.
Yes, he is not looking as handsome in his mugshot photo as of late.
No,
but
the
early days of Ed were his better days for sure.
They were. I mean, and you really hit the nail on the head with this whole narcissist thing because he has done so many interviews from prison and he just likes the attention. That's who does that.
Yes. I can see Ed's type already and I can see him doing those interviews and just being a total jerk in them, too cool for school. Not going to really tell you what you want to hear, but I'm going to get my face on TV or in the newspaper or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So hopefully prison is everything that prison should be for you, Ed.
Well, yeah. He's going to be there for the rest of his life.
And you're not getting any Vickies in prison.
Right. Right. There is some kind of talk that maybe he's not talking about the body because he still wants to use it as like a bargaining tool.
I kind of feel, because of the trash can thing in the beginning, that maybe he did some sort of dismembering and then threw him out and he doesn't actually have the ability to say where Chris is.
Well, I think it's very likely. Well, a couple of things. If they find his body and they see like all of the skull, they'll see there was like a bludgeoning and it wasn't like he pushed and, fell back,
right.
Or if he was stabbed, like it depends how he was killed. We don't know.
Right.
And so that would discredit his whole self-defense story. And so even though he's doing life, he doesn't want that. Also, he might be using it as a bargaining tool for the future. He thinks later, at some point he might be able to get out
with
it.
Doubtful.
But I mean, if that's all he's got. Also, maybe he had some help and he's afraid there's like some evidence left behind and he doesn't want to drag that person into it.
Well, that's possible.
It's possible. There's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, it's possible. Wow, sad story, dude.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, if you want more stories that are less sad, go to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/housewivesoftruecrime. Or you can go to the Clink Clink Club if you listen on Apple. If you go to our page, it'll just scroll down a little bit and you can subscribe. And on Thursdays, we do one bonus crime and it's usually not a dark one. It's usually more celebrity driven. And we talk about stuff that we just don't talk about.
For this, let me tell you, for spooky month.
Yeah.
I am doing,
I know what you're doing.
The tragic death of a horror movie star.
Oh, okay.
Dominic Dunn.
You know what? We just did the Brandon Lee one and you could have saved that for Halloween too, because wasn't he making the movie Halloween or something? Wasn't he in the Halloween?
He was making the movie The Crow.
Oh, The Crow. Right.
Yes, but Dominique died actually on the eve of Halloween.
Oh.
And she starred in the movie Poltergeist.
Oh, gosh. So, yes. I can't wait to hear that. Yeah. Okay. So that is coming up. And then on every other Thursday, besides the one that we do the crime, we just talk about what is going on in the daily world of crime. So we have been diving into the P. Diddy stuff. If you want to hear our take on that, we will be continuously talking about that. We talk a lot of reality TV because we know, you know, Gretchy loves those reality stars. Hey, have you been watching The Mormon, The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives?
Okay. I had it in the background while I was cleaning my house. I couldn't really get into it. Okay. Maybe I need some more time.
I think we need to both watch because I heard it's pretty good. Okay.
And I'm just so dedicated to Sister Wives right now.
I know. You're a Sister Wives whore. Also, we have five crimes and there is a good week and a half left that you can go to our TikTok shop and get 50% off. And it is the best deal that you will ever get. So I suggest that you do it now. Stock up for yourself and give it as gifts. I promise you, your friends will love it. And with 50% off, it's like basically free. And use the code CLINK50 in all capitals. Please, if you have not rated and reviewed us, please do that now. We really appreciate it. And I think that's all for this week. So clink, clink.
Clink, clink, guys.